and welcome to One Rep at a Time, your friendly fitness podcast from Cult Fit. Each week, we get deep into one aspect of health. We speak to experts on physical fitness, nutrition, stress, and sleep, often speaking to trainers, doctors, athletes, entrepreneurs, all to help you become a healthier and happier version of yourself. My name is Deepak Gopalakrishnan. The internet calls me Chuck. I'm going through my own fitness journey and I'm perpetually curious, putting me in the right position to host the show for you. Let's get cracking with today's episode. If you've been even just a casual observer of food trends in the last few years, you'll have noticed that this quiet shift towards vegetarianism, or rather, there's more of an acceptance of vegetarian food in even an otherwise omnivorous diet. I myself am an example of this. I'd like to think I actually make it a point to eat completely vegetarian on majority of the days. And even when ordering from out or going out, there's a conscious decision to order more vegetarian. Now, this could be for many reasons. There's increasing amounts of science saying that a more plant-based diet is good for you. But also, there are the ethical questions that come into play. Less animal cruelty, better for the planet, and so on. Now, it's not just more societal acceptance of existing vegetarian foods that's been doing the rounds. Over the last few years, a sub-trend that you must definitely have noticed is mock meat, etc., etc., which could be either be lab-based meat, or it could be plant-based meat, which mimics the taste and feel of meat. There are two different kinds of alternatives to traditional meat, and there are many companies around the world doing work on either. I, for one, wholeheartedly welcome this movement. It's still very, very early days for this entire movement, and we are talking about, you know, upending something that's been in tradition for centuries. But I think we'll get there, and I think it'll be overall better for us, our cohabitants on this planet, and of course the planet overall. So in today's episode, I want to deep dive into one aspect of this, plant-based meat. It's a topic that I have been fascinated with ever since I heard about the concept of meat alternatives all those years back. And we are going to do this by speaking to two people from one of India's pioneering companies, which is Blue Tribe Foods. I have with me Dr. Navneet Singh Diora and Sohil Wazir from Blue Tribe. Sohil is the company's chief commercial officer, takes care of all things brand, and Dr. Navneet Singh Diora is the chief technology officer. Hi guys, welcome to One Rep at a Time by Cult Fit. It's a delight to have you guys on.
Hi Deepak. Thank you for having us, Deepak. Excited for this talk.
Yeah, me too. So both of them, as all the other members of Blue Tribe, have spoken about their love for the planet and animal welfare as a motivation to work towards sustainable solutions as reasons for doing what they do. Just a very quick intro from my side for both of them. Dr. Navneet is a CTO, but has a very different sort of description that we might be used to seeing from CTOs in regular place. And I quote a profile I read online. Diora is responsible for developing tasty, juicy, and premium quality plant-based products, brand commercialization, and back-end supply chain management in his current position. He has degrees in food tech from IIT Kharagpur, Central Food Technologies Research Institute in Mysore, and A.D. Patel Institute of Technology in Gujarat. He's worked at Nestle, Coke, and Jubilant before this. Sohil's worked at Mondelez and Colgate-Palmolive from SP Jain in Mumbai. Again, welcome both of you to the show. It's a delight to have you on. Like I said, this is something that I have been tracking for a while. For me, it was quite interesting to see Indian startups doing something like this. So one from a health aspect, of course, is what I want this chat to be, but also just from, you know, observing industry perspective, it's really nice to be able to speak to both of you. I'll stop talking now for a while. And what I like doing with these episodes is, before we dive into the topic itself, just asking the guests to introduce themselves. And maybe one way to lead in is by asking what drew both of you respectively towards what it is that you do right now.
All right. I think my interest or my passion for animals is from long before Blue Tribe came about. I've grown up with pets around, and, you know, used to do a little bit of bird watching, wildlife photography and all of that. So I think that's where my passion for animals stems from. And I was also, for a large part of my life, I was a huge meat eater, almost eating like at least once a day, there was a meat dish on my plate, right? And eventually, I think that dichotomy got larger and larger in my head, wherein one day there was an incident while buying meat, and that's probably when I decided, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I can't have pets at home and yet be such a big fan of meat, right? I think that's where that whole idea of this stemmed from. I think what occurred to me was, I'm not averse to the taste. I really love the taste of meat. But I just don't agree with the way that it's coming to our plates. So is there a middle way to do that? And that's where, you know, I was reading about this into this space. And that's where Blue Tribe came about. Sandeep, who's the founder of Blue Tribe, and Navneet, who had been working on, you know, a product like this for the Indian market. I got in touch with them, and that's where things kind of came together. So I think it's a combination of passion for animals and love for meat that drives me in this aspect.
Wonderful.
In this line.
Well said. What a lovely combination that is, in a way. Navneet, love to hear from you as well.
Yes. So for me, there were three straight points, kind of. So one was, it was a bigger and good cause. So of course, everyone has to do some kind of work, you know, wherever he is or she is. So this had a good cause. The second, more coming from a technical background, kind of, you know, in food science and other things. So this problem area had a lot of evaluation to be done in science and technology. A lot of problems to be solved. So it was a complex problem, and that can be solved. And thirdly, it had more of a business potential to it. Kind of a good cause, a lot of science inputs that can come up, that can basically, I can use my skills at least to qualify to work on those problem and find some solution. And it had a lot of business opportunities around it. So three things kind of, and having worked in Nestle also, at a global platform also, people at a bigger level also are globally working in this way problem area. So I just thought this can be something that can reshape the way we eat our food. So that is something which was that is still driving me to kind of work on this.
Wonderful. What I really love about this is that, you know, you covered sort of like the gamut of various things that there could be from an ethical point of view, from a taste point of view. But at the same time, it's not completely altruistic, right? There's also a business potential in this. There's also the fact that the world is shifting its focus in terms of what they put on the plate for one reason or the other. And I think all those have been covered. So particularly, thank you for that answer, because I think it's very important for people who used to eat meat or still eat meat to accept and publicize. I think in many ways that meat eaters in some sense are going to be the evangelists for this kind of movement going forward. In fact, very interestingly, a few weeks back, we had an episode with somebody else who's actually the founder of a vegan protein food company. And her admission was that, I was a hardcore non-vegetarian. I never thought I would shift and be one of those vegan people or something of that sort. It's a phrase that she used, but you know, one thing led to another and there we are. And she's the founder of a pretty successful protein-based food company today. It's quite interesting that these realizations come in, and that's what ends up attracting talent such as yourself to a movement like this. So let's start with the basics. What is plant-based meat? If you could give us a brief history and really what goes into it. And when I say what goes into it, it could be in any way, as in the ingredients, it could be the process, thinking, anything at all.
Sure. Let me give you a little bit of the background, and then maybe Navneet can take over the technical aspects of it.
Sure.
Plant-based meat is not new. Globally, right? So globally, there have been trailblazers like Beyond Meat or Impossible Foods, which have been doing plant-based meat for the good part of the last decade or so. What they essentially do is try and create the same experience that you get from meat, but from sustainable plant-based sources. Now, the sources could be anything. It could be soy, it could be peas, it could be mushrooms, or it could be lab-based, like you, I think, initially alluded to. The idea behind it is to offer non-vegetarians, and the target market for this sort of product is actually non-vegetarians with a conscience, right, as we like to call it. It's people who love the taste of meat, but know that there is some impact associated with it, either an ethical impact or a planetary impact or a health impact associated with it, and which is why they want to either reduce or do away with it completely. But any non-vegetarian will not deny that meat tastes great. So how do you get a best solution to all of this is where plant-based meat comes in. You know, you've got a significantly lower impact on the planet, obviously no ethical impact, much cleaner form of meat because you're not putting in any antibiotics or steroids to grow that meat the way that industrial animal agriculture does now. And you're getting the same experience out of it. So that's where plant-based meat comes in. Obviously, the Western company started off with trying to make beef analogs because that is the meat of choice in the West. In India, companies like Blue Tribe, like all of the people in this space, are trying to make more versatile chicken sort of, you know, analogs, because that is the meat most consumed in India. In terms of what goes into it, I think Navneet, you can take that over.
Yeah, as Sohail told Deepak, it's more targeted to non-vegetarian, right? Let's say somebody have been eating meat from last a decade old. They understand they have everything in their memory. What kind of, and as soon as they bite it, what all goes in. So from a chemical point of view, these are nothing but chemicals, right? Which acts on your receptors, and that's how you trigger some responses, whether good, bad, ugly, kind of. So what essentially we do is, in terms of, let's say, recreating flavors, we try to match the compounds which are already present in the meat group. Let's say compound A gives you the feeling it is meat, right? But we do it through, by not killing animals, let's say through the route of fermentation, we create those exact compounds we add into our products through a natural fermentation, something like the yogurt, which kind of transforms the milk into the curd. So those aspects take care of the flavor part of it. So there is another aspect which is more into the texture part of it. So animal protein behaves very differently as compared to plant protein. So we use certain technologies that can transform the plant protein into the texture which is very close to different meat groups. So as for example, we have in India commercially, we have multiple meat groups like let's say the chicken, the mutton. Mutton is essentially a bigger meat group in terms of the body of the mutton, as well as the pork. So we have sausages, we have mutton, we have chicken, all in principle have different textures to it. So what we try to do is we try to understand what the essential elements of that meat group is. So once we deep dive into it, we try to use our food science and technology tools to kind of come closer to all those aspects. And then there is an entire science of developing into a holistic product that goes into the commercial production. But we essentially use the same way meat is used. So let's say there is a factory where we try to kind of make the chicken nuggets. Our products are similarly made in the same line. Mm-hmm. The front end is still the same. What we're trying to do is, in case somebody wants to shift from the animal to plant, they only have to work on the backward, not in terms of the forward. So that is something which is more sustainable in terms of the commercialization of the product.
That's super interesting. It's not just the input that you need to worry about, but also how it finally eventually reaches the market. It's kind of interesting. And I'm sure from a scientific point of view, it must be very fulfilling, rewarding, and there's a lot to be uncovered. And in some sense, it's very much just the tip of the iceberg. And Sohil, when you started off your answer by saying that plant-based meat is not something new, I was expecting you to say something like since the 18th century or something like that. And we're just talking about a time frame of 10 years over here, right? Since industry has been actively working to solve this problem. And I mean, it's all just looking up in terms of where it could go from here, from a whole number of angles, be it the money that is coming into the industry, be it the science that's going behind it, but more importantly, societal acceptance, I think. So the question that I have for you, how has the feedback been? What have been the things that have surprised you? What has been the general feedback for your products in the market?
Sure. So let me start by saying that societal acceptance or the demand for plant-based meat that is coming out or meat alternatives that is coming up now globally not just in India is probably a symptom of a much larger shift towards conscious consumerism. And this shift is a lot more apparent in younger generation. So millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha. I won't be surprised if there'll be a generation that comes, two, three generations now, from now, which is Gen Vegan, who are because it is moving towards that, right? I think it's a lot to do with the understanding of what's at stake for future generations.
Right.
And that is where people are trying to make more conscious choices. I mean, you can see it in India as well. People are foregoing fast fashion for, more sustainable fashion. You can see the demand for electric cars coming about now. Where was this 5 years ago, right? So I think all of this is pointing us towards a more hopeful future, I would say. And that's where societal acceptance comes from. So from what we've seen in the market, people who are from, say, 18 to 35 or 40 are people who know that there is a problem and are looking for solutions to address that. That is where our consumers lie right now. As you get a little bit older, it's slightly more difficult to change food habits because food habits are deeply entrenched in our culture, right? I mean, everything we eat is very, very linked to what our cultural upbringing has been. So it's not very easy to change that. I would say the younger generation is more accepting of change and more accepting of the need to change, I would say. We're seeing better demand from that section of society for now.
Yeah, it's a very interesting answer you gave because I was also thinking about fast fashion itself being one of the parallels that you could very easily draw. And I'm sure there is a slide somewhere in your company that has an overlap between these two. I love the way you had defined your audience, right? As non-vegetarians who want to try an alternative or non-vegetarians with an ethical bent of mind. Just for my understanding, do you target vegetarians at all just so that they can possibly get a different kind of a mouthfeel or anything like that?
No, not at all. I mean, short answer is not at all. The long answer would be, as a purpose-based company, we want to reduce meat in the world. The vegetarians, bless them, they're not eating any meat. So giving them plant-based meat or marketing plant-based meat towards them is not serving my purpose. They're welcome to try it out if they want to get a taste of meat, but I'm not going to be actively marketing it.
I think that's well said. All right. And I love the clarity behind that answer. There was no like beating about the bush, as it were. Now let's talk about things from a health perspective. Could you just talk about how a vegetarian diet, or at least a diet that removes some part of the meat, say for once or even twice a week, can be beneficial for both the body and the planet?
Sure. So I'll take the planet first, and then between me and Navneet, I think we can talk about the health aspects as well. See, meat production, consumption and demand in its current form contributes to about 18% of the greenhouse gases that are currently being released into the atmosphere, our second largest after travel. So as part of what man's doing is, it's our second largest contributor to greenhouse gases. About 180 to 100 billion land animals are killed on a yearly basis for feeding the 7.8 billion of us humans on the planet, right? 70% of the farmland that is currently under cultivation is growing food for animals, but humans get only about 18% of their calories from meat. So it's a highly inefficient process in that sense. You know, you've got excessive land use, you've got excessive water use, you've got greenhouse gas emissions. And over the last century or so, if you see the four big pandemics that have affected humankind, Spanish flu, bird flu, avian flu, swine flu, and to some extent, maybe COVID-19, they all have their inceptions in animal agriculture. And with the amount of demand for meat going up year on year, you know, we don't have that much land on earth to grow that much meat. So you're going to have to grow meat in smaller and smaller areas. You can bet that the number of pandemics are going to increase. You've already got something like a monkeypox coming about. You know, COVID has not even ended yet. So you have to understand that because we are growing animals in such small area in such a short span of time, that nothing about that is natural anymore. You know, so there is a huge impact of growing animals or large-scale animal agriculture, which it has on the planet and land, water use, and also on us because of the diseases that they can potentially pass on to us, right? In terms of the health impact, which is more selfish or which is more for a person, I will say I used to be a huge meat eater and now I'm completely off it. Personally, I feel there's a huge difference. Science backs it up by saying there is zero cholesterol that you get from plants. Cholesterol is only something that animals make and you can only get it from either eggs, dairy or meat. So there is zero cholesterol in that. You also have higher fiber, which leads to better digestion from plant-based meat. And you have lower inflammation. So meat also tends to inflame your body a little bit more or your muscles a little bit more, which is not the case with plant-based meat. Navneet, over to you to talk about the scientific aspects of this.
Yeah, so maybe just to bring to your attention, we don't have any other way. If you just see the population explosion, it's not a linear way. From 1812, 1 million to 1912, let's say 100 years passed on, we had a population of 1.5 billion, right? And let's say once again, 100 years passed, 2012, and it was population exploded to 7 billion, right? So that is how the population exploded. But we don't have an issue with the population which is rising. We have enough of land which can even feed currently 12 to 13 billion people. The problem area is ki whenever we raise animal to eat kind of, right? So these animals have to be fed the food, right? So what happens if you see the statistical data, worldwide at least 50% of the grain is fed to the livestock. So what happens if we need more land to feed this livestock, right? And what happens if we grow the grains, which takes lot of amount of water,
right.
Okay, and lot of amount of land. And in turn, we grow animals and this animal falls into a plate and we eat our animals, right? So this is, I would say, it's a second-hand food. So what would happen in a scenario in which we eliminate this animal industry? So what happens is we only depend on the grain. So in that way, statistically, we don't have any issue with the land. We don't have any issue with the disruption in the food supply chain. And in turn, we kind of tend to save water because a lot of water is saved. Maybe just to give you a bland example is if I need to grow 1 kg of potato, right? So I would, let's say, need 100 liters of water. Rice would need, let's say, 4,000 liters of water. Now, if I need to grow 1 kg of beef, right, which falls into your plate, it would approximately need 13,000 liters of water.
Wow.
13,000 is not something which is kind of beef consumes it. It is something the food which beef takes in, we need to add water to grow that, right? And what happens if we continue to increase this meat demand, we have no other way apart from cleaning the forest area. There is no other land. So what we do is, the best example is to see the Amazon forest, world largest rainforest, right? It is deserted basically right now, most of the things, you know. So that's how what will happen, then the species will get lost. And apart from that, Sohil pointed out one more important point is the greenhouse emission gases. Right. This is something which if we don't do it, we won't survive, kind of. It's that important, kind of. So these are the things which kind of brings to a conclusion we don't have any other options. Mm. This is the kind of the best option in terms of health. What does the body need, kind of? Let's say your weight is 70 kg. So approximately protein requirement would be 70 grams a day if you're not doing a bodybuilding or other exercises, right? And what you do from meat is you get a condensed form of protein, which is kind of easily digestible to your body. So we have definitely in our products also, we are using those protein which have, if you talk about the protein digestibility ratio, it is around 1, which is very similar to meat. So whatever you get in, it takes part to your body. We don't have any issue of the protein part. We are high in unsaturated fat. So it doesn't add to your building up your cholesterol level in the body. It definitely helps with you with all the cardiovascular diseases and every other thing. So in terms of holistic way, if you see it, we are doing a lot of positive impact to the climate and a lot of positive impact to ourselves. And secondly, there is no other way, sir. This is the only way if you read it. But the interesting point is ki none of the environmentalists around the world, they don't discuss this thing in their policy statement. The day it comes, you would see the rise of plant-based meat to be 1,000 times the what we are discussing
currently. Yeah, and I think, thank you for that. Thank you.
Nobody will discuss. Nobody will discuss that animal agriculture is contributing to around 55 or 51% of the greenhouse gases.
Yeah, perhaps that's just a matter of time because we've seen this wave happening with several other aspects like, say, renewable energy and all that before. I think the winds are blowing the right direction. It must be very challenging right now, I'm very sure, but at least it looks like it's going the right direction. And you're right. We don't have an alternative. We need to find an alternative to way things are happening right now. Just out of complete curiosity, and this is maybe falling somewhere in between, you know, complete plant-based and meat-based, and this is to specifically not so much about the ethicality but more about the efficiency of converting resources into protein, food, calories, etc. What do you think about entomophagy, which is eating of insects for food? I've heard that that is way more efficient. Just curious to know what you think about that, because we've been speaking about that till now.
Yes, if you see the life cycle assessment, that is what we call it as LCA, right from inception to point it lands into your plate, kind of all the water requirement, all the energy conversion. Yes, the insect protein does have that, does tick into the mark in which the efficiency is quite high. But we still feel there are a lot of regulatory issues with insect. Yeah. A lot of things are unknown with insects in terms of the species and every other things. So I still feel there are a lot of regulatory challenges and even the purification of insect for the protein. Mm-hmm. The entire kind of the cycle in which the commercialization of those protein comes into a plate, that is also a difficult topic. Yeah. We directly cannot consume insects.
Yeah.
So there are multiple unit operation we need to develop, right, to purify those protein. And what about the recycling of all those biomass which comes into that? So if you just do a bland calculation of LCA, then it falls into a good thing. It consumes less water and other things. But if you do the entire purification of other thing before it gets into the protein, you directly can't eat insects. There are multiple ways. So that will be an entire industry to be drawn. And how does the recirculation happen? So if you do all the calculation around it, you'll have a picture and you'll say it might not look as good as you're saying.
Yeah, and very clearly, this is something that you've thought about before. That is a very well-articulated answer. And of course, there is, of course, the cultural baggage that comes with it, right? Like, which I guess is big as well. Like,
that's exactly what I was going to say. You'll have to deal with consumer perception as well.
Yeah.
About
I mean, that's just something that I've been reading about. And, you know, I can't say that evangelize that completely, but it's kind of interesting to see what the alternatives to the current. To me, both of these, plant-based or lab-based or even entomophagy for that matter, what interests me as an outside observer is just how everything is just trying to upend the way diet that has not changed too much over the last few decades or even centuries is suddenly forced to look at, you know, there's a reckoning of the way food has been consumed for centuries almost. And that to me is quite fascinating. Great. Thank you for that. I think we just got so deep into the science behind that. So let me then ask you, everything seems to be going in the right direction, but as you're trying to recreate meat, what are the various challenges that are in your way?
Few challenges from a business point of view. So one is the day the cost of plant-based meat is equal to or less than the actual meat.
Right.
In that scenario, the scale up will happen.
Absolutely.
So one of the challenges, let's say our product or whatever products are in the market, due to technological constraint or due to the raw material supply chain and other things, because since it's in initial stage of research, so we are almost double the price of the actual meat product. So if we can encounter this thing, this is one of the challenge. And then we can't address to entire community in India, kind of, if we are in India or globally. Hardly few people who are quite urban who can kind of eat it on the daily basis. And second, of course, second definitely is something people don't have that kind of awareness as such. Because so let's say example, anybody who eats meat doesn't think how it's impacting kind of the environment, because it's not directly linked up. It takes a lot of time. So what we still feel this kind of session which we have over the podcast or any other forum in which people tend to understand. And the third thing is it's not something which is universally accepted. Animal agriculture is the real cause, because there are a lot of lobbies of meat and other things. A lot of political situations. So if these things are the challenges and we can overcome them, then definitely next time you'll see this industry is something which will...
Absolutely. As you mentioned those challenges, the parallels with the fuel industry just seem to be so stark. Like you mentioned, the moment the cost of plant-based meat becomes at par or lower than actual meat, that's kind of like what's happening in the solar industry right now, where the cost per unit is actually lower than that. So purely from a commercial perspective, you'll have people switching over. And then of course you have everything else, but you have the same parallels elsewhere. This is kind of fascinating to me as you're talking about this, and Sohil's answer earlier also about conscious consumerism, how there are so many parallels and it looks like all these trends are just moving towards the same direction. So Sohil, anything you want to add to that?
So I think well captured by Navneet. I think awareness is the one key problem that we will have to address sooner rather than later. And awareness about the problem in the first place. The solution already exists, but awareness about the problem is what we need to bring about. As to where we are going wrong with the meat industry and how it's unsustainable right now. Secondly, on the pricing, I think there's a couple of different ways to look at it. One is purchasing meat directly, fresh meat off the butcher's block versus processed meat, which you find in the supermarket aisle. I think we are fairly close in pricing to what you find in the frozen aisle, but still not as comparable to fresh meat. You know, I think there's still a way to go there.
So my next question really then comes to the product line that you have right now, and really what is it that you are planning to do in the future? So currently you have nuggets, sausages, momos and keema. So one, what is the rationale behind choosing these as your SKUs at the moment? And is there a plan to move to other varieties of quote unquote meat?
All right. So let me take that. See, the idea behind having this kind of a portfolio is stemming from the Indian mindset, honestly, or the Indian taste palette. We cannot be, or an Indian plant-based meat company cannot be a Beyond or an Impossible and have one product format catering to 20% of the market. You know, a burger patty is great for the Western market, but in India, like every consumer is consuming meat or cooking meat differently, which is what we need to cater to. So, for example, the keema. And you know, in our initial discussions, when me Navneet and Sandeep used to discuss this, our initial discussions itself pointed us in the direction that we need to make something that is versatile enough that people can make it into their own home gravies. The idea behind, you know, keeping the keemas, both the chicken and the mutton, unmarinated or vanilla, is that we want consumers to do what they would do with animal meat. You know, make it in the same way. So the way you buy mince from a supermarket, chicken mince from a supermarket, is the same way that you would find us as plant-based chicken mince in the supermarket or plant-based chicken keema in the supermarket. So that's one type of our products. And these products also feed nicely into the Horeca channel who want to, you know, have their own plant-based meats, meat dishes on the plate or on the menu and want to work with something that is not pre-flavored or pre-made in that sense. The other aspect, and this is a more recent study that we did with our consumers, is that a lot more people are attuned to having plant-based meat or open to having plant-based meat as a side dish and not the center of the plate currently. So getting the foot in the door with all of these people required us to have some snacking kind of products, which is where if you see our new launch, which is coming up in a week's time, we're launching a kebab. It kind of feeds into that. So kebabs, nuggets, sausages, all of these are part of your meal, but never the center of your meal. So that's where we want to kind of give as many use cases as possible to the consumers out there, or to the non-veg consumers out there, to replace meat in as many use cases as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, right? Because at one level, you have the whole scientific challenge behind making this, which I'm sure gives Navneet a lot of sleepless nights. But then there's also the whole commercialization. There's the whole, okay, how do you make this practical? What's the foot in the door, as you said? I think that's a brilliant phrase. And, you know, work yourself up from there. I think that's brilliant. And I won't ask you to reveal your full, you know, next 5 years plan, but I am assuming that a large part of that will be based on the insight that you'd given us for Mince, right? What is the base thing that you can make in your own way? And one way I see that is on your website and on your Instagram have been evangelizing recipes a lot, be it even with the sausages that you have or with the mince, of course, which is going to be way more versatile. So I'm assuming that's a conscious decision that you want people to take these things and not have them, I mean, just fry and have them, but also to, you know, do what you want with these and turn these into your own dishes. So is my reading into that correct?
Absolutely. I think you've figured out our marketing strategy there. But just taking that forward a little bit, I think the ultimate goal for us, and this is what Navneet and me keep discussing about, is the ultimate goal for us is to get real chunks out there, which people can use into gravies, like, you know, like a plant-based butter chicken, I think, or a bhuna gosht type of thing, is where we can really start replicating everything that an Indian does with them.
It definitely sounds exciting and I must say very, very yummy as well. I think the last few things that I really want to ask you is, this actually, you used this term already earlier in this conversation, but you've been an advocate of conscious consumerism. You know, you've spoken about it before. Tell us how that can be part of a healthy lifestyle overall and not just with respect to what you put on your plate.
Oh, absolutely. I think there are probably younger people than me who are out there living this a lot better than I am, but opting for more sustainable fashion. I think fashion is one of the other big contributors towards wastage and resource wastage, which we can, with small steps, you know, kind of avoid. So, you know, do you really need that new t-shirt every second week?
Right.
You probably don't. I think that's one of the first places that you can, you know, check yourself in terms of what you want to do. The other places are, there are actually a lot of apps out there and which you can actually check your carbon footprint with. And we actually, you know, work with some of these apps to provide people who are, you know, controlling their carbon footprint, tracking their carbon footprint with some rewards for doing that. So, you know, driving carpooling or driving an electric car, huge impact on the planet, huge impact on your carbon footprint, which you can very easily track, you know. Just being mindful of what your electricity situation is at home is also a huge contributor, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think there's no rocket science to it. These kind of things have been told to us in school, but I think at some point we just kind of not pay attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, that rocket science should be solar powered, as it were, just to carry the theme forward. All right, so we're almost towards the end of this. So this is a new nascent industry. And like you said, the lifetime of this entire industry has been just a decade. So I guess one question I have for you is, what are some of the perception challenges that you've had as a company, as an industry, which you are working towards? Speak to us anything about that. It could be something cultural, something specific to the ingredients, anything at all?
Sure. So I think I'll take the first part of it being the cultural sort of block. In the sense, a lot of people, you know, when we talk to them about, hey, you know, why don't you try plant-based meat instead of the meat that you're already having, take it as us asking people to go completely meat-free or vegan, which actually isn't the way to go about it. I think most studies, most consumer behavior studies that have been done on this aspect have proven that it's actually easier to cut down, you know, by 25-30% on your meat, thereby making it sustainable. Right. So if you're eating meat, say, twice a week, just cutting down one of those use cases and replacing with plant-based meat is still a 50% change that you've brought about. So that, I think, as a company, we consciously tried to tell people that, hey, you know what, reduce the amount of meat that you're consuming. You do have an option to have the same experience from a plant-based meat product, which is available out there. I think that would be the first one. Navneet, any other...
We try to bring in similar nutritional profile, whatever the good part in meat is. Let's say the actual chicken has something around 20-21% protein, right?
Right.
So in our keema, if you look at back of the nutritional label, it's around 20% protein. So it's something we try to match with the, you know, nutrition angle, and we try to go as low as with the sodium content. So that also kind of, you know, bring us leverage. But yes, once consumer try it and a kind of, it won't be exactly very similar to the meat, but at least the initial first trying of the consumer is something we find challenging. Right. And once they try our product, they do understand what all it brings to it. They understand the whole rationale about why the company is made around.
Right, right.
It's not something a food company kind of, it's working for the environment through the food. Yeah. We need to bring in that message to all the consumers. Yeah. In that way, we can kind of holistically right. build
yeah,
up.
It's quite a market. Challenge, but at the same time, sort of exciting to see this movement happen. So we're pretty much towards the end of this, guys. So thank you once again so much for taking the time to come on to the show. Any last pieces of advice for our listeners, especially those who you might say fall into your audience, people who are meat eaters, who want to try experimenting once in a while with vegetarian food, anything at all, apart from, of course, trying your delicious products, anything that worked for you, especially Sohil, since you had made that transition yourself.
Honestly, what worked for me, because I was coming from a more ethical perspective, I think what worked for me over there was just going, I mean, wrong to say cold turkey here, because we actually went off turkey. But,
right.
but yeah, but when we talk to our consumers, about 95% of them say that we used to eat meat, say, 4 or 5 mm-hmm. times a week. We've now reduced it to 2 times.
Wow. Okay.
And we are replacing those use cases with plant-based meat. So I think that is one of the places that products like these work. You know, it gives you the same experience without the impact, if I could just encapsulate that in a sentence. I guess, I mean, give it a try. I think you'll be surprised.
Yeah, I certainly was. And I would definitely advocate doing what Sohil just said, at least for a couple of days a week, I think is a great idea. Navneet and Sohil, thank you so much, not just for appearing on the show, but for what you do. I think the movement is important in India, around the world. I'd like to say it definitely looks bright. I'm sure that there are a lot of challenges behind it. So I can only wish you guys all the best in terms of doing what you do. And from a consumer perspective, I'll definitely be looking out for the kebabs and everything else that you come out with in the future. So thank you guys once again for what you do and for coming onto the show and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you, Deepak.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Deepak.
You are also contributing by at least taking up these topics in your discussion.
Absolutely.
We still feel that these are more relevant, at least for now. Awareness is something on top of our agenda.
Yeah.
Product is something that will come along.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can only hope to do our bit. And thank you guys once again for this. And everybody else, you know what to do. All the links are in the notes of this description. If you'd like to try Blue Tribe's products there, you'll find a link in the notes of this episode. And Navneet and Sohil, thank you guys once again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was my chat with the guys from Blue Tribe Foods, Sohil and Navneet. A few takeaways before we wrap up today's episode. One, a diet which is a little more plant-based is a good thing. Now, I'm a meat eater and I certainly don't want to sound like I'm asking everyone to switch over completely, but even going vegetarian for a few days a week can help in many ways, both your own health and, of course, the planet. Two, plant-based meats like the ones that Blue Tribe sells are getting better by the month in terms of taste, protein content, and cost. They already have health benefits like zero cholesterol, high fiber, a good amount of protein, and even added vitamin B12. This, I think, is certainly an interesting space to watch for the next few years. And lastly, this is not a point regarding fitness per se, but call it a point about healthy lifestyle overall. Being more mindful in terms of what we consume, what we buy, what we dispose of, how we use things that we buy could make us healthy in many ways, be it body-wise, financially, and of course the planet. I was really struck by Sohil's thoughts on conscious consumerism. You can check out Blue Tribe's range of products over at bluetribefoods.com. They'll also be available on marketplaces like Amazon and Big Basket. All these links are in the notes. There are some other options for plant-based meats as well, and recently some high-end restaurants have started experimenting with these too. I would heartily encourage you to try these out or just try a vegetarian diet once in a while. Part of a healthy lifestyle is lessening our own negative impact on the planet. And finally, for some fun group classes, the best gym workouts and a home workout experience like no other, download the CultFit app today and become the healthiest version of yourself. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next week. This is Deepak Gopalakrishnan, aka Chuck, signing off. Thank you for listening to One Rep at a Time.